Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrar's Food Safety Inc. podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions relevant to both the food safety industry as well as cannabis and hemp. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjrfsi.com/webinars or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Good afternoon, everyone, or good morning, depending on where you're joining us from, and welcome to today's webinar, Take Your EMP to the Next Level. My name is Amy, and I'm a member of the marketing team at Perry Johnson Registrar's Food Safety, Inc., and I'll be facilitating today's webinar and offering technical support to our speakers. Today, we're excited to be welcoming an industry expert as a guest for the presentation. She'll be introduced to you all a little later on in the show. All right, now I'm going to go ahead and introduce our first speaker, and that's Paul DeMarin. He is the Senior Vice President of Food Safety and Supply Chain at PJRFSI. He joined us last year in January with over 35 years of experience in the hospitality, service, and retail food sectors. He's a board member of the OFPA, that's the Ontario Food Protection Association. He's also an advisory council member with the George Washington University School of Business for their digital marketing certificate program. So, Paul, I'm going to hand things over to you, and you can take it away.
Thank you very much, Amy. Thank you, everyone, for joining today. It's a real pleasure to have you all here, and certainly thank you to Mel that we're going to get to in just one moment. As I mentioned, you may have seen my post yesterday on LinkedIn. We've decided to change up the format for today's webinar and all future webinars. And in the past year, we've hosted about 50 different webinars, to the food safety industry. And I can't thank all of our speakers enough. Really, at the time last year, when we all had to pivot, because of COVID, we really wanted to deliver top content to the industry. And at the same time, give an overview of who we as a company were. I think we've now achieved this. So moving forward, and again, for all future webinars, we're only gonna focus the webinars on the actual content that's being discussed. And we're going to forego all the introductions of PJR. I think you probably by now know exactly who we are. So thank you very much for that. So at this time, let's move forward in the presentation. And I would like to, and I have the special pleasure of welcoming Melody Gee to our platform here today. Melody, or Mel, is a close colleague of mine. She's the Vice President of Governance, Intelligence, and Analytics over at Corvium. And today we're going to be discussing the still hot topic of environmental monitoring program and taking that to the next level. So let me just tell you a little bit about Mel. She's a food safety professional and has experience in different stakeholder positions, including the GFSI certification program owner, SQF, retailers, manufacturer, and food safety testing labs. At Corvium, she leads the governance, intelligence, and analytic department and supports the compliance data analytics training and certification program for food industry, and that is to achieve the elements of the smarter food safety era. Ms. Gee holds both an MS and a BS in food science and engineering and is certified with data science and a Six Sigma black belt. So with that, Mel, again, on behalf of the company, thank you so much. I'm going to pass it over to you, and we're going to make this a little bit, a lot more interactive than we normally would. So I'm really looking forward to the discussion. So over to you, Mel.
Thank you, Paul. And thank you, Amy. Nice meeting you virtually, everyone. Thank you, PJRFSI, for this opportunity to have me today to discuss this still on trend topic with you all. My name is Melody, and I've been in the industry for about 15 years. Like Paul introduced, my background covers multiple stakeholders in the industry, and actually my expertise throughout the experience and my consulting time with all the small and medium business, my expertise is actually to establish a practical and sustained food safety management system from scratch. So that's why today I'm actually also excited to share some of my thoughts how to design and develop your environmental monitoring program with you all here. So like Amy introduced, please feel free to ask questions. And I'm glad I have the opportunity to discuss this topic with Paul and with you all here. Real quick, before I started the presentation, I would like to give a quick introduction or background on who is CoreVM. So we are a company specialized in centralized digital transformation solution to give and help the industry reduce food risk and improve product quality. We also utilize the data that we collected through our API and modules through our food risk intelligence solutions to help the industry with your environmental monitoring practices, your sanitation practices, your product testing practices, ultimately assist our customers and food safety professionals in the industry with the compliance and conformance of your food safety measures. If you are interested, please feel free to click the website on the slide and to learn more about our product, who we are, and our service. So before we start, I guess, Amy, we have another polling question coming up.
Yep, we absolutely do. Let me send that out to you all really quickly. And that just has to do, how do you ensure your EMP program meets GFSI requirements? As I said before, choose whichever of the options on your screen best matches what you all do at your organization. We'd like to see some good participation, at least 50 or 60%. So get those votes in and we will move right along once we see some votes come in. All right, and for those of you who might have joined us a couple minutes late, that is not a problem at all. We will have the slides as well as a recording of the presentation available within 24 to 48 hours of the webinar finishing. All right, so it looks like we've got some great participation. Thank you all so much for sharing your thoughts. It looks like the majority voted that they perform a gap analysis in order to ensure their EMP program meets requirements. So Melody, back over to you.
Awesome. And then that's a great result. And then I'm actually it echoes why we're here and then talk about this together. So the first polling question we discussed about the risks, that I agree, and then I see people see there are a lot of potential risks from environmental monitoring. And then also for the second polling question tie in highly what we're going to discuss today, and I'm going to show you there's one way also you can internal review and align with your to check if your EMP is meeting the requirements besides gap assessment, besides the third party consultant. So we are going to start with, and hopefully we're going to cover these four questions in today's webinar. First of all, we're going to understand what are the requirements for environmental monitoring program. Then I'm going to discuss a little bit, or I would like to invite you to think about it, is how do you design or how are you visioning an effective environmental monitoring program at your own facility. Then we're going to talk about, I'm going to give some example of what can we learn from our own environmental monitoring program data. And then lastly, I want to raise these questions, or we're going to discuss more on does our EMP really help prevent today's food safety incidents.
Mel, it's very exciting to see this. It still remains a very important topic today. I guess before we just get into the main part of this, can you tell me in your own words, what do you feel is the main importance of environmental monitoring?
That's a good question. And I think in my opinion, for a environmental monitoring, first, it needs to be risk-based. It sets and it designed based on your operation needs. So in other words, the EMP can be executed and it fit in your food production and an operation daily. So it can be sustained. And then second important part for environmental monitoring is, of course, it's gonna cover all the pathogens or potential hazards that gonna potentially come from the environment, the production environment. Um, moving forward, to begin with, our first question that we have is what are the requirements? I use FDA requirements as an example. And like you can see, FDA pointed out that environmental monitoring for an environmental pathogen or for an appropriate indicator organ is contamination of a ready-to-eat food with an environmental pathogen is a hazard requiring a preventive control by collecting or testing environmental samples. Another verbiage of environmental monitoring you will see is when FDA is talking about sanitation controls. So whenever a sanitation control is deemed as a preventive control at your facility, an environmental monitoring program is required to verify the pathogen or biological concerns from the environment are controlled at your facility. So these are the two aspects, quote unquote, from the FDA requirements.
And Mel, what, you know, again, in your words, what is environmental monitoring in this aspect and why is it required?
So environmental monitoring, from my understanding, is to monitor and control all pathogens or any potential hazards that could come from the production environment and ultimately could cause harm or risks to your final product safety. Hence, then the product might potentially cause the harm or any potential health issues to the public, to the consumers. So this is important, not only to protect the public consumers' health, but also to prevent your product, your brand. With the newly released FSMA, like the example I used, it is required for ready-to-eat manufacturers or facilities. Also, it is required as a verification step for sanitation, for the effectiveness of your sanitation practices when this practices is considered as a preventive control at your facility.
Thank you.
Okay. So similarly, I will use SQF requirements as an example of GFSI requirements. So in SQF, the latest version, version 9, they pointed out the environmental monitoring should be a risk-based environmental monitoring program. It should be in place for all the food manufacturing process and immediate surrounding areas which impact the manufacturing process. It requires you to line out the responsibilities, the methods for the environmental monitoring program. And those needs to be documented and implemented. So from both GFSI requirements and FDA requirements, I think we all can tell, or it's not hard to conclude that EMP is important and it's required. However, how to establish the EMP and how specifically, what are the SOPs are not specified nor detailed in either of the requirements. So what do these mean to us then, to us as a food safety professional? So in my opinion, I think we have a full control and a flexibility on how to address the EMP to go with our operation and align with our risk assessment, depending on what are the risks of environment hazards or pathogens coming into our product, we develop or design the environmental monitoring program accordingly. Like I said, the question Paul just asked, I think in my only the EMP that can goes with our operation, our pre-op or our production, it can be sustained and carried out long-term wise in your facility and then do the job that we expect to see our environment monitoring program that can prevent our production environment. So let's start with how we design an EMP then. Like I said, we have the how-to is not very specified in the requirements. It is based on the facility. So I would like to divide this into four stages and then that could potentially leading toward a practical environmental monitoring program design. So first thing first, we're gonna identify the risks and the zones within your own facility. A lot of time I ask these questions like, do you really need to test Listeria every day or every lot? Is it Salmonella really a concern at your facility? The answer will be very vary based on what products you produce, but what kind of risks you are dealing with. But all these questions we should ask upfront when we, at the very first stage, when we design our environmental monitoring program. And then our zones can be considered against our existing hygienic zones, how we identify our sanitation practices, then we can establish our zones accordingly. Regardless, we are using zone 1 to zone 4 or food contact surfaces, non-food contact surfaces. Those are all based off the hygienic zones that we have for our sanitation practices. Then, based on the risk assessment and the zone being identified, then we can determine the pathogen to be tested according to the risks and according to the zones. Furthermore, down to the next stage will be the sampling, and then the testing methods shall be identified, and more importantly, validated accordingly to make sure we are having an effective testing method for those pathogens that we would like to control. Now, I would like to invite you also to think about one question is, how often do you review your test point or your sampling locations? Do you consider those reviewing frequency at this stage, or you're considering the frequency at the end where we all collected samples knowing the results? The reason I'm asking this question is I think it's quite important to set forth the environment monitoring EMP with the reviewing frequency in mind in the designing stage. This will associate with the last stage in this designing roadmap of how this EMP overall fitting in your facility operation. Understanding the facility operation is a key when we design an effective EMP. So a preset frequency of how often do we review our test results? How often do we review our testing methods? How often do we review our sampling locations could provide us and valuable inputs on whether our initial sampling frequency or initial testing method is proper. Do we need to adjust or whether our EMP is designed effectively at the very beginning? Another side about the facility operation is I want to talk about the corrective action plan in the environmental monitoring program. The time of completing a corrective action and also how complicated it is to complete a corrective action has also a direct impact to your facility operation. Ultimately, it will impact the implementation of your EMP, because we all know we need to get the production, the operation moving. And at the same time, we want to make sure the product safety is not compromised. So finding the balance of how we can balance EMP to stick with what we know from a food safety perspective and the operation we are running at the facility daily is crucial to make sure we can keep our EMP executed at all time.
Mel, that's, I'm hearing a lot of words here, adjust, adapt, pivot. These are all great topics and very interesting from my perspective. I think the point you mentioned about mapping is also very good and certainly helpful when starting to build an EMP. I've heard a lot about EMP sampling in the industry as well. Can you speak to the importance of that or what your thoughts are there?
Yeah, sure. So it is EMP environmental sampling. It is important because environmental contamination or absent, we need to have a full picture of where did we take the sample? What are we sampling for? This also goes back to why we do the environmental monitoring and also ties back to why we do the risk assessment. Risk assessment is important and it being the first stage. And what is the outcome of the risk assessment. So ultimately, we are controlling hazards from the environment. So sampling is crucial. Like I said, we need a full picture of our product production environment. This through this environmental sampling, we want to have a variety. First, we want to have a variety of samples so we can learn our production as much as we can. We sample different zones, we sample different areas, different equipment, or even some of the mobile moving element. Also, we wanted these samples to and can represent the entire production environment. Another false to this is also random sampling is also important in addition to routine sampling, so that to make sure that we can catch the near misses. And how we address random sampling, this also ties and go back to we need to have a very thorough foundation and understanding of our floor mapping, our zones, where are our routine sampling locations are, so we can apply those random sampling to help us catch the near misses. So now we have a concept of four stage that we're going to design. It's how we design a sustained EMP. We're moving towards EMP development. But before I talk about the development part, I would like to re-bring up this concept that you all are probably very familiar with, is the plan, do, check, act loop. If we use SQF phrases, it will be say what you do, do what you say, and reveal it. What I want to share here that how the PDCA loop incorporating the EMP development is that it's not only important in the implementation stage, it is also important in the EMP writing development stage. We can keep this loop in when we write out our environmental monitoring program to ensure that our program is complete, including the do part, check part, and act part. Oftentimes, when I was still doing auditor to review those EMPs, EMP SOPs, a common finding is that the corrective action part is not clearly defined in your EMP. And also another thing is when there is a deficiency that we apply corrective action, what are the parameters that we need to consider or review before we say, okay, now the production, now the EMP is back to our normal operation. So the parameters for those safe release back to the normal should always be considered in our EMP develop as well. So with all those in mind, let's start with our EMP development. Like I said, the first stage is risk assessment. So to develop a EMP, we need to conduct an overall risk assessment. How environmental pathogens impact your facility particular and your product particularly. Like I said, not all the facility needs to test Listeria daily, as well as not all Salmonella might not be the risks to all the products or productions out there. So all these questions will be addressed and identified, studied through a thorough risk assessment. This will make it a lot easier when you determine the next step, the methods, the frequencies, even the zones throughout the development. So once the zones, once the risks are assessed and identified, then we define the zones. It will correspond to the hygienic zones that we have. Oftentimes, and that is what I suggest, you will design your zones according to your hygienic sanitation zones. What you can do is prepare a detailed, straightforward floor map, a blueprint of your production line, like what we have for pest control program. With this floor plan, then we line out where is the zone one, normally it is where the products are directly exposed to the environment, or we direct handling any of our exposed products area. Then we move to zone two. So zone two is those area adjacent to the direct exposed product production area. Then move to zone three, which is sometimes the hallway or the warehouses, or where the basic GMP practices are implemented areas. Lastly is the zone four, which are the furthest zones that is away from the production area. The risk is relatively low, but that doesn't mean zone four isn't important. And sometimes we consider the offices, the hallways, the employee offices, those are all considered under zone four. So after the zones are identified, I would encourage you to do another risk assessment. This time is based on each zones that you identified on your floor map. This way, it gives you a better picture on how you determine what shall be tested, how often it shall be tested, and where shall I apply those sampling locations as a routine samples. So once these are all set, it should give you a pretty good foundation to specify the actual testing methods. And now a lot of these test methods are validated, and you can refer to USDA, FDA guidance, or AOAC certified methods. Also rely on a third party labs, the testing methods that they are using. We're pretty established about this in the industry in terms of testing methods for a particular pathogen that you wanna test for. Lastly, there will have to be a CAP plan in place for non-conforming results. This makes the difference how sustained your EMP will throughout the implementation. How long does it take to close a CA? Is CA needed for every single deficiencies you found from every single zones, or you conduct a correction right away and take time to look into what is the proper corrective action? How much does these corrective action plan will impact your actual production? How long does it take? All these questions, I would like you to think about it along with your own facility's situation. Another layer I would like to share here is that it is okay to have a positive or a presumed positive at your facility on your records or on your testing reports. The fact or what matters is what you do to correct it and to prevent it happen. So corrective action plan is the key.
Go ahead.
No, I would just have one last re-emphasize is that you will need to address what are the criteria to release the production line back to normal after a corrective action is implemented, after a testing deficiency is received.
That's important. You know, when I look at the PDCA, that, you know, certainly goes way back to Dr. Deming, in fact, but it's great to see it's still active in today's food industry. You know, I have conversations with our auditors quite regularly on this, but typically, do you find that most companies are ready to implement their EMP program?
That's a good question, Paul. Yes, I think so. I think so. There are, well, we talk a lot about common findings, some of the common issues we see when we review the EMP SOP, but I still do think to current stage, the industry have a pretty good understanding on why we need an EMP SOP, why we designed this, and how we execute it. But there are definitely spaces to improve, and that's why I would like encourage the audience to think about this plan do act checked loop to make sure that we have all these aspects considered in our EMP SOP development stage. Okay, so we definitely, I would say, if someone asked me, I would say definitely spend a lot more time in the EMP development stage. And once the EMP is implemented, actually our job just started. We need to monitor the implementation part of our EMP SOP, whether it fits our operation, whether it meets our expectation, whether more, the most important thing is whether it control the pathogens that comes from the environment. So the first thing I want to share is do exactly the problem the program says. Since we've already spent a lot of time that to develop this SOP, what program that we need to execute at our facility. So let's do exactly what the program says first, and then check balance on the outcome, the frequencies. Like I mentioned, if an EMP is not fitting your operation, it wouldn't sustain. So a frequent check balance is crucial to ensure that the resources are located in the right place. And these testing frequencies fit the daily needs. For example, if we, from our risk assessment, we say, okay, it's very needed to test Listeria species every day in the production area or near in zone two, near production area. Maybe after a month, since it's a daily operation, or after a month or 2 months, let's check balance and see how the results tell us. Are all those negative results or are all those presumed positive results? Do we need to increase the frequency based on results, or do we need to decrease the frequency because we have a very robust sanitation practices in place? We might not need to test it daily. So those are the questions constantly we as a food safety professional to implement EMP need to ask ourselves. And this will ultimately save us a lot of time and cost at the end. Next is review the test results and trends, including sampling locations. We talked briefly before. This gives us a big picture on how well our EMP is executed. And then also this serves the foundation of reviewing and modifying the EMP. Our own test results are the best data. I always tell our when I was doing consultant, I always tell my clients that our test results data or any data that we collected through our EMP execution are the best data elements and sources for us to conduct proper risk assessment moving forward. Like I mentioned before, it is okay to have a presumed positive. What makes it different is the corrective action plan. So also a corrective action implementation monitoring is crucial. How long does it have, did we apply corrective action after a deficiency happened? How do we apply it? That's the first thing. And then how long does it take to correct it? Lastly, is it really effective? We need to verify it, whether this deficiency is going to happen again in the future. So this gives us a reflection on how well our sanitation SOP it is. Like the in general goal of having an EMP is to verify whether a sanitation SOP is effective or whether we conducted proper sanitation. So all these, the deficiencies, the positive results, the corrective action, all these are a good overall picture for us to go back and think, is our EMP enough? Shall we go back, look at our SOPs throughout the implementation and execution? After all, review all the associate records besides what we talked about, the sampling, the test, the corrective action. Also look at the time, look at the cost, look at the human resources, the technicians. All these records give us a very good and thorough understanding of our EMP, if it is effective to our own production, if we allocate our resources effectively.
Mel, you've been in the industry industry for quite some time now, and I imagine that you've seen a lot with the different companies you've worked for as well. If you're looking at companies that are just starting to implement an EMP program, are there any areas that you've seen or that you noticed where companies are not meeting GFSI expectations or customer requirements? And, you know, if so, what do you think companies should be on the lookout for?
I think we can go back to the first step. We look at the requirements, whether you're BRC, whether you're certified under BRC, FSSC, or SQF, what exactly line it out in the requirements, in the code. And then we have our current EMP SOP in place to see if it's meeting or aligned with the coding. Some common issues or common findings from the written SOP that we see before that could be a good reference for you is, first of all, are all the responsibilities clearly assigned and identified? Who is leading the EMP or in charge of the EMP? If there is a deficiency, what is the reporting structure? Who shall I report to? Who should take action? Who is responsible for final release back to normal? Then another thing is clearly defining the test frequency, sample frequency, as well as the reviewing frequency. I think this is might be coming from my experience. We are transitioning from SQF version 7 to version 8. We actually started adding, you have to review your test results in a preset frequency to be able to study and conduct analytics on your own test results. So oftentimes, I see a lot of companies missing the reviewing frequency. And this is something could be a good reference for you, for the audience today, is how often do you review your test results? Those are something you can look into. Another aspect I will say is the sampling method. How exactly the SOP of taking the swabs, how exactly you want your technician to take the swab. Because we are all familiar with how to take the swab, this might become a blind spot in our SOP, but it's very important that how to take the samples, swabbing, how big, what is the area, the sampling area size, those are crucial and important to your technician when they go out to take the samples. How many samples do you take from one sample location? All these can be considered, or when you go back and review your SOP and to see if you have all those issues covered.
And it looks like I'm on for another polling question here. But before we talk about, what's likely to happen after an EMP is developed and implemented, we wanted to ask a quick polling question about how facilities manage and monitor their current EMP performance. So there's that polling question for you all. As before, just select whichever of the options suits you and your situation best. And once we've gotten some good feedback, we will move right along with the rest of the presentation. I do want to encourage everyone, if you have any questions or any points that you wanted to clarify, please absolutely feel free to drop those questions right into the questions tab of the control panel on your screen. And once we've finished up the prepared slides, we will go right into the Q&A, and we'll hopefully answer all of the questions you might have regarding EMPs and implementation. I'm only seeing about 40% of participation, so it'd be great to see a couple more votes before we move on. And for those of you who might have joined us a little bit late, that's no problem. A recording of the presentation will be available on the PGFSI YouTube channel in the next 24 to 48 hours. All right, thank you to everyone who voted. And I'm honestly a bit surprised, Mel, how many say on paper they're recording monitoring their EMP.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised. I'm with you, Amy, there. Yeah, but this is good. This is good. Actually, we were going to introduce, maybe you can consider some other solutions, give you a big picture on how you analyze and review all the test results. Okay, so Okay, moving on, I would like to give you some of the examples or outcomes that you could consider from your reviewing your test results or lab reports. And hopefully by the end of the presentation, you could consider at least using maybe Excel or some of the the smart solutions to look at your test results systematically to give you more insights on the tests you've been conducted, because they are valuable to you, to your particular facility. So the first chart, the first aspects I would like to share is regarding zones versus possible versus the positive results from each zones. So from the on the your left side, the chart represents that the test amount in each zones. So as you can see that in zone two, we have the highest amount of the sample collected and being tested, which is understand because zone two is the most or relatively high risk area to the production. So we collected more samples. And within zone two, Listeria species are tested the most. Now on the right side of that chart, it demonstrates the average positive ratio by each zones. So as you can tell, zone four is actually having the highest average positive rate, which is 16.64% among all other zones. So what do these tell you? And I invite you to think with me together, like why zone four having the highest positive? Is it because it is the furthest zone? Is it because it's the least risks in the having the least risk to the central to the production area? So sanitation practices are implemented less compared to other zones? I don't know the exact answer because each facility will have different answers to this question. But I encourage to consider and look back to your own test results. And then one more thing I would like to invite you to look at on the chart is zone four on the right side is zone four and one being the top one and two zones having the highest positive ratio. Yet zone two has the highest test amount overall. So how do you apply the corrective actions for these two zones? Should it be the same for zone one and zone four, or they should be different? I also invite you to go back to your facility and look at your own data and see if you will generate some similar conclusions from your testing result history and your own data.
I'm sorry.
Any questions here? Yeah. Any questions here? Yeah.
You know, Mel, it's obvious. I mean, environmental monitoring is really, it's a process used in ready to eat facilities that assesses how effective the plant's being clean. You know, on top of this, what else could this mean, or what else does this mean?
Let me see how I tackle this. Yes, it is, like I said, it's actually required for ready to eat product. And it is because ready to eat product has the high risk, the consumers consume it directly. And we have environmental impact exposed products. So we need to check whether they are cleaned. Another fold of this is it's not changed that to other productions or other product manufacturers that we need to test whether our environment is safe. I don't think it means different other than swabbing the surfaces, control the air, test the air, test different equipment. and conduct all those sampling activities. But I do think the frequencies, the pathogens, what we are testing for could be different depending on what products you are producing compared to ready to eat. Sometimes an ATP testing, it's enough for the type of environment that my facility is in. It could demonstrate efficiency already for our sanitation activities. All in all, it is quite important through the EMP execution is to verify and whether our sanitation practices are effective, as well as all those environmental pathogens or hazards are controlled to prevent our product safety. I hope I answered the question.
Yeah, you did. Thank you. That was great.
So moving on, another examples that I would like to invite you to think along with me is the test we conducted versus the recalls that we heard from FDA or the public. So a quick example is in 2019, from the USA biological recalls, the three main categories are Listeria mono, which are 52.1%, E. coli, and Salmonella. However, I took a real quick on the testing data that we have in the pathogen testing is the majority of the tests are conducted on Listeria species. We only have 12% tests conducted on Salmonella and 0.2% conducted on E. coli. So question is, are the testing helping the food safety incident? Whether we test Listeria species, can it help the Listeria mono recall? I guess also dig in more is that when we get an indicate from Listeria SPP, what actions are we taking to prevent it is not a Listeria mono, it is not potentially a Listeria mono food safety incident. So this is another question or information I share with you all and encourage you to go back to look at your testing results. Do we need to test that much of Listeria SPP versus we still have the recall? Do we have the recalls of our product or potential food safety incidents that internally occurred from product testing have a Listeria mono contamination? And how did we do that? How can we change our environmental monitoring program to sufficiently or effectively prevent Salmonella, Listeria mono, or E. coli recalls eventually? So moving on to after I gave two examples on how we can learn our own EMP testing data, and this highly fitting what we discussed at the very beginning, how we design our environmental monitoring program. First, does it address the risks at our own facility? Does it work with our operation? Some questions that I would like you to challenge or ask yourself that throughout the entire EMP execution, implementation, and design is how many, like stated on the slides, how many tests have you conducted annually? Are they effective? How many random tests do you test? How many critical issues have you identified? Are all these percentage of sampling locations or mall zones are risk-based? How do your test result trend compared to your public data? How do your test result trends compare to your peers in the industry? These questions, you can find a lot of the answers from your own data. And one thing I also would like to share is, I heard this a lot when I audit suppliers. I oftentimes ask questions, why do you set up weekly to test Salmonella? And the manager will say, oh, it works throughout years, and I carried over from my previous QA manager. It's not wrong, it's right. If it works at your facility. But it's also good for you to go back and challenge on, yeah, why do I test it weekly? What are the risks Salmonella bringing to my product? Do I need to reduce or increase the frequency? All in all, all these questions being challenged or asked to yourself, the answers are different. I could not give you a standard universal answers because every facility's operation is different. Every product risk is different. And you being the food safety professionals at your own facility, you know the best of your product risks and your operation risks. Okay, to moving forward to summarize our my presentation today is that I would like to bring a new thought to you all to rethink how you design and developed EMP and how can you collect those data for you to generate a conclusion or a constructive feedback to help you prevent the environmental pathogen risks. We all know every year QA ask budget or for each year EMP is a cost center. It is. We need to buy software, we need to buy testing kits, we need to send out the sample for conducting analysis. It is a cost center. However, if we design our EMP fitting our operations, set up the frequency proper and fitting the needs, the risks that we identified, ultimately it's saving the cost for our company. It protects the brand, protected the product, our consumers. And if we don't have recall, we don't have withdrawals, we are saving a lot of the money for our company. So I encourage you all to spend more time to design the EMP at the very beginning and before you go out and then collect all those samples, because I believe a valid and a sustained that could be carried out and implemented EMP worth more than 1,000 more or random tests that you conducted. And if you conduct 1,000 tests that you don't review all those test results, that doesn't give you any valid information. So I would like you to look into more how you can collect those data in a centralized location that you can review them, report them, and conduct and generate conclusion that to help you to support the business sustain their operation and production. At the same time, prevent product safety, prevent our brand. So thank you all, and I hope you find this set of presentation helpful, and I really encourage you to take those questions back and ask yourself, take a fresh eye and a look at your SOPs when you go back to your production. And thank you, Paul, and I'll get back to you.
Yeah, thanks, Mel. I really appreciate your time today. It was certainly great. And you know, just on the last slide, you were talking about the cost of an EMP. You know, if you think about the alternative, the cost of, sick employees or sick, people in the industry that are having your product and you have a bad reputation because of that or brand damage, it only makes sense to have a strong program and make sure that you budget accordingly for that. So at this time, again, thank you very much. I'm going to pass it back to Amy to do some question and answer.
Absolutely. Thank you both so much. Just before we get into the Q&A, I did want to mention our upcoming list of webinars. We have a full schedule all the way through June on our website at pgrfsi.com/webinars. Just this week, we also have a webinar, Lessons from the Trenches, the Past, Current and Future of Food Safety with Denise Webster, a good friend of Paul's and an excellent speaker. So I would encourage everyone to sign up for that webinar as well. All of our webinars are free to register, and we hope to see you on a future one. All right, I am going to go ahead and open up the questions tab. If you had any questions that you had thought of, please go ahead and get those in so we can respond to them while we've got Mel on the line here. I'm seeing a question here, Mel, from Jeremy. Jeremy is asking, in your opinion, what's the best practice for frequency of reviewing data?
Oh, Sorry, I got. Can you hear me? Or
yes, I think it
is. I think it depends. It also goes back to how often you conduct a test. So, for example, if the salmonella is tested daily, I would say you can review the data quarterly or monthly. But if it's a test that you conduct quarterly, then I will say you probably need to, besides the annual review of the entire data to meet the GFSI requirements, you can collect a more longer time of those data and then do a review, maybe a year or 2 years. So the answer is it really depends on how often you test those different pathogens.
All right, great. We've got a question here from Michael. Michael is wondering if you have any tips or recommendations on how to start transitioning from, and this goes back to that polling question where we were both surprised by the result, moving from the paper, lab reports and everything, moving from that to a more digital format. Do you have any recommendations of how to make that jump?
Sure, come to Corvium. I would encourage you to take a deep dive in on the practices that you have now, and then look into where it needs to be digitalized and look out for solutions out there that could provide you the exactly needs that you need. We do have now very established APIs for collecting the sample locations, test results. We also have established a software to help you review. And we also have established a software to give you insights, to help you generate the report. So it depends on your needs, but all in all, it is that one thing I would like to share is that it doesn't mean that our routine job is changed. It just means it gives us more time to spend on the design, the thinking part, how we can really execute EMP to help prevent food safety incidents. One universal solution also to help in this situation is if you currently are using Excel or lab reports and you wanted to do a digital transformation, do a risk assess and it's mapping out all what are the needs we need, where are the gaps, and how much budget we are having, and what are the future risks when we incorporate digital solution, because the risks are shifted. It's no longer from swabbing, no longer from sending out the sampling, but more from we need to keep the information safe, we need to keep the data safe. So these are all the questions you can ask yourself when considering a digital transformation.
Great. And on that same note, as a follow-up, would you recommend digitizing any historical data just for, just to have some comparison?
Yeah, I would definitely recommend that. Yes.
All right. Fantastic.
And then a good approach to do the leap, because I see a lot of the audience are using lab testing report to study the trend, is you can start with having those data in log those data in Excel sheet. At least you can see what are the trends, where are the near misses, and then Excel spreadsheet can help you with the full digital transmission as well. So I always say we crawl before we walk before we run. So let's shift from lab testing results, the paper records, to some sort of digital format first. And then by then, once you get into Excel, Excel gives a basic function of for you to study the data, and you will generate your own conclusion. And then moving forward to give you a more in-depth insights from the historical data. And yes, I do, please keep all those historical records, and those will help you when you do the full digital transformation to do the full insights and analytics.
So do some data entry and then join Corvium.
Yes.
All right. We are just about out of time. I didn't see any other questions come through. So if anybody had any other questions that maybe you didn't feel comfortable asking on the air, that's totally fine. Mel's email is on the screen there, or you can also reach out to PGRFSI. Our email address is very simple. It's just pgrfsi@pgrfsi.com. So if you send us any questions, we are more than happy to get those questions to someone who can get you the right answer. Mel, Paul, thank you so much for taking the time to present for us. Any parting words of wisdom, Mel, before we sign off?
I think I'm good. I do encourage the audience. I hope the audience find it helpful and ask those questions yourself. And I know you will get the slides deck after the webinar. So keep asking yourself questions why we're doing this, and you will generate this conclusion on your own based on your facility.
Absolutely. Yep. As you mentioned, Mel, the slides will be available for download usually within the next day or two from pgrfsi.com. If you have any trouble finding them, do feel free to reach out to PGRFSI. So on behalf of PGRFSI and everyone on the team here, I'd like to thank everyone for taking the time to join us for today's webinar, and we hope to see you on another webinar. Have a great rest of your week.